Blog Talk Radio.
Library time. For back at library. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the backyard. This is your host, Margaret Marshall, and I'd like to welcome you all to the Labrish. Tonight we have a very special guest, and we are very blessed because we get to be in St. Elizabeth one more time. And I want to just remind our listeners that I don't know if anyone would remember that we did a tour of the island, one parish at a time. And it's quite interesting to me to find that they mentioned here in the Encyclopedia of Jamaica that St. Elizabeth is one of the oldest parishes, and it was originally included much of the west end of the island, but part of it became the parish of Westmoreland. Now, that's where my family's from, and this happened in 1703, and a part was carved out to create Manchester. So you can imagine how large St. Elizabeth was. So I just thought that was quite interesting. But the part I wanted to remind our listeners about is that our first guest from St. Elizabeth telling her story was from Bull Savannah. And our guest tonight is from Burn Savannah. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But this is how I tied it up. You know, they said most of the southern part of the parish consists of dry savannas divided into two by the Santa Cruz Mountain that run north and south. Now, up to the early 20th century, the economy of that area was based on the raising of cattle and horses, and I wondered if that's why our last guest was from Bull Savannah. That was perhaps the reason for the name. So it will be interesting to learn from our guest tonight about Burnt Savannah, because the encyclopedia goes on to say that parts of the savannah that is in St. Elizabeth happens to be very dry, and sometimes they had experienced a drought as long as a year. So I'm wondering if that's why that part is called Burnt Savannah. So I hope we can get some light shed on this tonight. But without any further ado, I'd like to welcome the listeners online as well as the callers on the board, and to thank you for being here with us to share the story tonight of this special guest. You know, here in the backyard, we gather once a week to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich culture of our beautiful island of Jamaica. Even though we might not be here, there, enjoying the trade winds and enjoying the good old days when we grew up, we want to make sure that we're leaving our stories so that the next generation can have a glimpse of how we were brought up, how we lived, and how we enjoyed growing up in Jamaica. So I'd like to ask my guest, and let me tell you a little bit about my guest before I open up the mic to him. I was very impressed when I heard that he can recall some of the things he did at the age of 12 very well. Now, you all know I'm a senior citizen. Senior, as I call myself. And I have memories of my youth, but I can't fit them in an age group. I cannot remember approximately how old I was when I have some of my memories. So I was very intrigued by that. But our guest tonight is Mr. Baldwin Evans, affectionately called Earl, and he was born in Jamaica in Burnt Savannah. So without any further ado, I'm going to open up the mic. If our guest is on the line, would you hit 1 on your telephone, please? And I'd like to remind our other callers that are listening online that if you do want to interact with us, you should call in at 1-718-766-4558. And we'd love to have you join the lavish. I see a raised hand. So I'm going to open up the mic to Earl. Good evening. Are you there? The mic is open.
Hello. Thank you, Margaret, for inviting me on your program tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure to have a son of St. Elizabeth, because we've been going through the parish, learning things about this history that go way back. So I'm pleased to have you here tonight. So would you tell me a little bit about Burnt Savannah?
Oh, I noticed earlier on you said Bull Savannah. There was a listener on from Bull Savannah last week.
Yes.
My parish is Burnt Savannah. Well, the name Burnt, it's not really that it's dry, because over the mountain we get a lot of rain. But, you know, maybe a few weeks in the year, like in the middle of the year, you might get drought. But
So you're not really in the real severe drought area?
No. The real drought area is way back in the south, Bull Savannah. But Burnt Savannah, it's reasonable rainfall, you know, because the mountain is right there.
I got you. All right. So can you tell us what is your earliest recollection of going to school there? How old do you think you were that you can remember?
Well, I can remember from the A grade. There was the head teacher for that area was Teacher Jones. Then you have teachers in the area who would teach different grades from A, B, right up the line until sixth grade. That's the top grade, which the head teacher, which was Teacher Jones.
Oh, you even remember the name.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Was it a big school? I mean, a large number of students?
Oh, yeah. I would say maybe 300.
Oh, quite a bit.
300, yeah.
Now, how did you get to school?
Well, I was nearby. I was just maybe less than a quarter mile. I was living less than a quarter mile from the school.
Uh-huh.
So we could stay by the school or stay by our home and hear them singing in the school when the bell would ring, you know, for recess.
Right. Very good. Now, I understand that you were from a big family?
Yes.
A large family, I should say.
Yes, because the six of us was the second marriage from my dad, but the first marriage from my mom.
Right.
So then, you know, my dad was the butcher in the area, Lacovia. Lacovia was just 3 miles away from us, where Market and, you know, the little town is. So there is a market there.
Uh-huh.
So he was the one who butchered in the market. His dad butchered in the market, and then it come down to him after his dad died. So he was the butcher all the time there.
Right. So they would butcher somewhere else and take the things to the market, though. They don't do it in the market?
No. He have the proper place in the market area there where he do the butchering.
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then the inspector would come when the butcher at least 11 o'clock. The meat would be ready by 11 o'clock in the day, Friday. So the inspector is right there to check the beef before they start selling.
Oh, my goodness. In the market?
Yeah.
So I'm a Kingstonian, so that's a little intriguing to me to know that they would actually butcher the animal in the market?
Not in the market area.
But I mean in the general area.
Yeah, there is a little house.
Uh-huh.
Make up for the purpose.
What they used to call that house?
Well, the butcher house.
All right. Okay. Now I'm getting the picture.
Yeah, so they butcher down here and then cut it up in 4 quarters. Then they put up to the market, which is only maybe a few steps away, you know.
So someone would just walk with it?
More than one got to walk with a quarter.
Right, I know, but it did not have to go on a transportation.
No.
Now talking about fresh, that is real fresh.
Oh, yeah. Then people in the area, they would be waiting to get the beef.
Uh-huh.
So they get fresh beef, they go home and cook. Maybe.
Right. Now, what kind of animals did he butcher? Just cows?
Cows. Just cows.
Ah.
His permit would allow him to butcher from 1 to 3 cows each week.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Because, when he butcher on a Friday, then Monday morning he got to go to the police station and sign the book, you know, to tell what type of cow he killed, if it was a bull or if it was a female, and the color of the cows, you know, just in case somebody didn't steal the cow and sell it to him.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now where did he get most of his cows? Did he raise cattle?
Oh, yeah. He have a big farm. So he raised a lot of cows, but when he don't have any cows ready for marketing, he would go in the area and then he would buy cows.
Mm-hmm.
Then he would butcher 2 or 3 each weekend, and he supplied the whole area.
I got you.
So we as little boys now, we would finish school on half a day on a Friday.
Uh-huh.
And we would go over to the market and, you know, help in whichever way we could. So we learned the way of butchering cows.
You were actually in the house when the cows were being butchered?
Yeah, sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, if we're not at school, then we would hang around there.
And it didn't scare you?
No, it was like fun.
Right, I know what you mean. Did you have any chores connected to the butchering?
Well, yes, because I when I grow up now, I start raising like goats, and then I was able to butcher the goats on my own for curry goats, you know, making curry. Yeah. So I got my experience from there.
I got you. And you say his dad did it before him?
Yeah. All his life, my grandfather, he was a butcher for the same market.
Wow.
Then my dad used to butcher with him. So when my grandfather died, then he took it over.
Right. Now, is any of your brothers taken over from your dad?
Well, one of my brother from the first marriage, he took it over for a short time after my dad died. But then it's hard work, so I guess he didn't want to bother with it for too long. He kept it for maybe 5 years. And then he gave it up.
So let me ask you something. Are they still having that fresh meat in that area now, or is there a supermarket or something going on there that people buy their meat?
They have supermarkets, but they still butcher deer up to now. They still butcher
really?
Deer.
That's good.
Every Friday. And the name of that area is Lakovia.
Yes, I know about Lakovia. Did the diesel always stop there when the trains were running? Was that one of the stops?
No. The train line didn't run in that area right there.
Gotcha.
It was further back. The train would run up Upperton.
Uh-huh.
A state named Upperton, where they plant the sugar cane, and they have the factory there where they manufacture the sugar and make the molasses and make the white rum.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you this now. You think that they're still butchering in that house?
They're still.
Oh, wow.
Every so often, they got to modernize the house.
Uh-huh.
You know, the government, the market is run by the
corporation.
So every so often, they got to modernize.
Uh-huh.
You know, because even the area where they pull the cow up,
it
got to be sturdy. They got to keep it, up to date.
Right.
Or else they try to pull the cow up there, everything cut down on them and cause big problems. So the government or the city, they see to it that every so often they do the modernizing.
Right. Well, I understand from your information that I got that you were more your mother's helper. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah.
So why don't you tell us about, first of all, do you remember the grandmother that you mentioned, was that your mother's mother?
Yeah. But I got a little memory of my grandmom.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot, because she died when I was pretty much young.
I see.
Yeah.
So tell me about your mother.
Yes, my mom, she, it was two sisters and my mom, so it's three, and one brother. So they always lived there, and then my dad always come in the area, to buy cows.
Uh-huh.
And then he met my mom. Was a nice young girl.
Yeah.
And at that time, his wife died, so he get in with my mom and marry my mom. And he bought another piece of property and built a house there and moved my mom from her old house where the other sisters were living.
Right.
So,
so she grew up in the district too?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
oh
yeah.
Interesting.
She came to school, yes. She went to came to school.
Right.
So, yeah, we grew up, and I could remember my dad always bring home a lot of beef. We eat a lot of beef.
Were you near to the sea at all?
No, but his farm wasn't too far around in Parati, nearby the sea.
Oh, I got you. But you, it's not like you could walk.
No, no.
I see. It's okay.
Maybe like about 12, 15 miles away.
Yeah, right.
All his farm was.
Right.
So on a Monday, he would go to the seaside because he got a special guy that bring in fish for him, a fisherman who would bring in his fish and get it together for him. So he go and pick up his fish on a Monday. So on a Monday, we have fresh fish. And, you know, different days, different menu.
Right. Now, did you grow any of your other food? I know you had the farm with the cows. But did you grow any other food that you consumed, or you bought it in the market?
Oh, yeah. We grow food. But at the same time, my dad would bring home food from the market as well.
Right. I'm sure he got the best of the crop because he was the butcher, so they're going to save this best stuff for him.
When they come in on a Friday, the man who sells the sweet potato, he would weigh out from a dad and put it one side. The guy who sells the yellow yam, I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Of course, honey, I am. I'm a Kingstonian, but I still know that.
Yeah, he would weigh out. So each one of them would weigh out their stuff from my dad and put it away. Then on Saturday now, they would bring it over to him and collect the money, and then we have food, but at the same time, we plant a lot of food, too.
Like what?
Yam, corn.
Wow.
Peas, you know. Well, when it comes on to fruits, we have a lot of fruits because mangoes, sweet sap, sour sap, all those, you know. We cook.
Right, right. So, what I think I'm gathering here that in the district that you grew, you were almost self-sufficient. You had everything you needed right on your farm.
Yeah, because my dad would get the guys to work the farm, you know, work. Yeah, because he plant a lot of corn. The guy would come in and dis up a certain amount of the property. And they plant corn, so they would feed the cows them on corn, and we have a lot of corn as well. So it was a pretty reasonable, nice life.
Life was good.
Oh yeah.
Life was good on the farm.
We didn't even realize that we were living such nice life until I leave.
Amen.
Yeah. When I leave, I realize that we were living good.
Definitely. I feel the same way. You know, you never appreciate what you have when you're in it.
Right.
But when you're away from it, and as you mature, I think, and look back, you say, you know, I really didn't even realize that I had so many privileges.
Right. Here you go.
Definitely. Now, were there a lot of what you would call poor people in that district that, you know, just, you know, in Kingston you have a lot of people who don't have any properties. And even in my times, you had poor people there. What was that area like? Was more or less, I know that, you know, some people have more land than the other, but did you have what you would consider poor people? Poorer people?
Yes, but the difference is, in the country, everybody grow a certain amount of fruit trees and a certain amount of food. So, in other words, although they're poor, but they still have a lot of fruits and a lot of food.
They're not starving.
Yeah, so what my dad would do and my mama, they would, majority of the people in the area surround us, my mom and dad would give them meat, give them
uh-huh.
a thing on the weekend.
Right. What didn't sell?
Yeah, because sometimes he got to bring home a lot of beef. He would, you know, salt it and then put it in the big keg.
Uh huh.
They could sell it as salt beef.
Oh, uh huh. Interesting.
And it's very delicious.
Uh huh. I know. I remember it from the old days. And it shows you the difference of, you know, when you're able to eat fresh with no preservatives and no refrigeration and frozen. You know, Earl, I believe that the people who are still living, you know, natural and eating from the soil and having things fresh, I am wondering if even now they are in the mode of appreciating what they have. Because I understand in some parts of the country, some of the people are like, would be, you remember how in the early days, I'm sure they used to grate the corn to make the porridge, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. I understand that some of the farmers now are selling the corn to buy cornflakes for their children.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of giving them the natural form of corn.
Yeah, because the younger generation now don't like to work, don't like to till the soil.
Right.
But,
so it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Well. Now I want to talk to you a little bit about what values do you think, you know, growing up like that helped you to be the person you are? Because what my show is all about is leaving stories of our life when we grow up to show the younger generation that, you know, we were brought up with nuggets of wisdom that have taken us through, you know, many, sometimes challenges in our life because we had a strong foundation in our growing up. So what do you think you learned from growing up? Let's talk about in that part of Jamaica. Because I know you've traveled, and I'm going to talk about your travels after that.
Yeah. Well, one of the important things, you know, was I used to listen to my parents and work with them. Because, you know, some kids don't like to, parents call them to send them to fetch water or to go to the store. They would refuse. But I always work with my mom. And, you know, I learned, my mom was a dressmaker.
Uh-huh.
I sit there and learn from my mom. So as it is right now, I could darn my pants, what you would call it now. I could stitch it.
Uh-huh. With your hand? And it?
With my hand or with the machine.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So you see, it's very important to be obedient.
Right, right.
As a child, if you are obedient, you learn a lot.
Right.
Things work out better because that's what helped me today. Because my mom is the one who used to send me go on whatever it is to fetch the greens or to fetch whatever. Yeah. And to make it nice, she always, every now and then, she would give me some money.
Ah, they call that here an allowance.
Yeah.
Good, very good. So besides being a dressmaker, you said your mom used to make special drinks?
Yeah, because she was sick. She was sick with diabetes,
uh-huh,
and high blood pressure, and you know she used. I'm the one she used to send. We would go up in the mountain or up in the area where these type of things grow, and she show them to me, and I'm the one she used to send go and look everything. There is a special, I remember she had a touch of bad heart too. There is a herb there that she showed to me. I always go and fetch it for her. You would call it Search My Heart.
Yes, Search My Heart. Okay.
Yeah. And then she would, juice it. Sometimes she would boil it, but it's always better to juice whatever it is.
Right.
You get everything live.
Mm-hmm.
When you boil it, most times you kill a lot of the substance.
Right, right. So she was, even in the early days, she was into juicing, you know, because there are some people who are into that now.
Oh, yeah.
So she got the knowledge. And yes. From what I understand, it was these things were handed down to her from her mother.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
ah,
yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Because to treat her diabetes, even to help people in the area, she's the one who, you know, used to help people in the area when they're sick. You know, she was good at it.
Right.
Most time I'm the one who used to go and look for everything because I didn't even think about it. Maybe the other ones wouldn't go. I don't know. I just didn't think about it. But she knows she can send me and I will go. So it was good when I could... I listen to her and learn from her because right now it helped me and it saved me and it saved a whole lot of people too because I learned from her.
Right. So what age did you leave Jamaica and where did you go?
I leave Jamaica age 28.
And you left straight from Bern, Savannah to where?
To England.
Uh-huh. What year was that?
1977, because 10 years before my mama died, I was in a real nice job in Kingston working for the public works.
Uh-huh.
So she took sick, and she was down there, and out of the six of us, one was still there helping her, and then he got a call to go away and farm work in America.
Right.
So he came by me. I was living in Kingston then. He came by me, and he told me that he got to go because he got a call. So there won't be anyone there to look after my mom.
Because your father had died before?
Yeah, a few years before.
And so, all of the children had left except one?
Yeah, except I was in Kingston and the other brother was living there with
right.
her. Yeah. So then he was going away. So he stopped by me in Kingston and tell me, oh, there won't be anyone there with the mama. So I went to work the next day and I told the foreman, I said, my brother who was living there with my mama, he going away to America and there is no one there. So the foreman said, okay, Evans, you go down and get somebody put there with your mama and come back to the job and I will, you know, raise your pay because I don't want to lose you from the job. So I said, okay. I went down there. I just couldn't find anyone suitable to stay with her. So I decided to stay with her. So I stayed there and I called the foreman and the job in Kingston and told him that I can't find anyone to stay, so I just have to stay. He said, try my best. So I tried, but it didn't work. So I ended up spending the last 10 years there with her.
Oh, that is commendable. That is very commendable.
Until she died.
How old was she when she died?
She died at age 84.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
well, was most of the people that you grew up with in the district of Burn Savannah, were many of them still there?
A few. Not a whole lot, because they died out, you know.
Right. So there weren't no grandchildren living there or anything like that?
No.
Yeah. What I'm trying to get a picture of, you see how the generation that sort of lived like that and the generation that would have the concern and passion for a parent like you did, you know, that is rare nowadays. And young people, not all of them, but, you know, a lot of them don't have the same dedication to their, you know, their elders.
Yeah.
So it's good to have stories like this so that, you know, people can know how things were in different parts of the island. So I really, really I'm sure that our listeners are enjoying your story. And so you went to England after that?
Yes, I went to England. And then...
Now, did you have relatives there?
Yes, I have brothers and sisters.
I see. So you were not going just like... You were not the pioneer. You were not the first one there.
No.
Good.
The reason why, when she died in 77, all my brothers and sisters came out from England and America. And then I went and catch some animals, some goats and pigs and, you know, kill them. And
oh, I've had a big feast.
Oh, yeah, it was a big feast. So they was impressed. So
uh-huh.
When they were returning...
You were still on the farm.
Yeah.
Wonder.
When they were returning back to England now, they said, oh, I treat them so nice. They're going to give me a vacation.
Oh.
So I said, okay. So I went up and called the people from the city. They got to come and inspect my business and everything to give me the permit to get the visa.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
They inspect my business. I was raising a lot of animals then. They gave me, and I went over for 6 weeks. And that's where I met my wife, and we got married.
Now, is your wife from Jamaica, too?
Yes, but she went to England when she was just 15 years old. Her mom and dad take her over.
I see. And what part of the island is she from?
She's from Clarinda.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So do you have children?
Yeah, I have two boys. They are still in Jamaica now. They're doing good for themselves. One have a taxi company, and the other one work for the government.
They're in what parish? They're in the parish that you grew up?
No. They are in nearby Kingston, Gregory Park.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. That used to be a stop on the train.
Yeah.
I remember that. So so tell me what you brought to your life now from what your mother taught you.
Well, like I said, I'm the one who used to go and look all the herbs and the leaves and the fruits for her.
Yes.
And when I came here, I leave England in 1983. I came here, and I was here. Then I took sick. I realized there was a free test going on that Saturday. So I went and took the test for people with prostate cancer.
Uh-huh.
Free test. So I went and take the test. And then I got to wait for 2 weeks and then get in touch with my doctor and see if I was okay. Well, my doctor called me and said, well, there was something wrong. So he got to send me for a biopsy test just to make sure.
Uh-huh.
So I went and take the test, and the test was positive. So I start going now to the hospital and then getting things together. I have the seed implant, radiation.
Uh-huh.
Everything was fine for 1 year. After 1 year, I went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, the tumor came back with a vengeance.
Uh-huh.
My world was upside down. So then I start remembering what my parents used to, use these green fruits and these vegetables. I just remember it. So I start, after that, I said, well, they said I got to have a major surgery. I refused to have the major surgery. I said, well, there got to be something somewhere can work without that surgery. So then I start putting those things together and then start feeling better.
Wow.
And that's 15 years ago.
Wow. And you have been making this special thing for the past 15 years?
Yeah, but it was just for myself.
Yes.
But recently I start to, and give it to some of my friends who have been the same problems like me. And then it helped them.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, have you been back to the doctor to get any tests?
Yeah, I've been back, but not to that same... Not to
right,
that
but so you're all clear of the cancer now?
Oh, yeah.
Really? That's remarkable.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it just goes to show that everything we need is on the planet, is on the earth. Everything we need is here in the soil, you know, and on the things, in the things that the soil produces,
is
knowing what the right ones to put together.
Yeah, and how to do it and things like that.
Right. So actually it was a blessing that you were the obedient child, and it was a blessing that you were the chosen one to have this recipe passed on to.
Yes, to
obedient. So at the time you didn't know how very special the gift would be.
Right, there you go.
You know, a lot of times when we are in, we're being blessed, we don't even realize it.
Right.
But there comes a time when we come into the realization, when we look back, and we can say, oh my goodness, that was a blessing.
Yep.
So what would you say to people about your overall experience about growing up in Jamaica?
It, like you just said, it was a blessing.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Because now you've lived in London. Was it London that you went?
No, no. It was in the West Midlands, which is Wolverhampton.
Oh, okay. I've never been to England, so I have no idea where anything is.
That's about 100 miles from London.
Oh, wow. Yeah, good. And how did you like living there?
Oh, I love it.
Really?
Yeah, because people are so friendly and things run different there because, you know, when you go in the country there, they assign you a doctor close by to you.
Uh-huh.
If you take sick in the night, you would call your doctor. Your doctor would get on his bike or his car, and he would come up to your house.
Is it?
Yeah. If there is something that he can manage, he would get on his phone and call the ambulance and take it to the hospital. You would get the same treatment in there what the other doctor would get, or what the lawyer would get, or whoever would get. The same hospital, the same treatment. And if you stay in that hospital for 6 weeks, when you finish the 6 weeks, you don't owe the government a dime.
Well, perhaps you need to go talk to all the people who don't want socialized medicine. We need to get you to Washington. Anyway, now you have been here for the past 15 years, you said, here in the States?
Yeah, I'm here from 1983.
Yes, okay. Let me remind our listeners that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock to just sit in the backyard and labrish about growing up in Jamaica. This, for the next past couple of weeks, and perhaps the next couple of weeks, we're gathering stories from people who grew up all over the island. And tonight, we have the pleasure of speaking with Edwin Evans, who's affectionately called Earl, who grew up in Burnt Savannah, St. Elizabeth. And for our visitors, or just friends of Jamaica, that don't know about St. Elizabeth, you can check on the show we did, Discovering Jamaica One Parish at a Time, and you'll get some interesting facts about St. Elizabeth. So back to you, Earl. The experiences that you had in Jamaica and the association that you had with your mother, being her gopher, as I would call it. She would tell you to go for this and go for that, right?
Yeah.
And you obediently did it. Okay. And now it is paying off because it has helped to save your life.
Yeah. Because the same, by being obedient, the same juice that I'm able to put together now, which is Earl's Amazing Green Juice. I give it my name.
Right. Earl's Amazing Green Juice.
Yeah. That's
wonderful. And you're making this available to the public?
Oh, yeah. Because I was in a storefront before, but starting to do shipping, I end up now got to open a factory.
Oh, so is anything going to change since you're getting bigger?
No, all my intention is to help all who I can.
Right, great. So the formula will be the same?
Yeah, the formula is the same.
Right. Now, do you believe that this is passed down? Because, you know, we did a lot. When we did different parts of the island, there was a lot of information about the original Africans being called upon in the days of slavery to help with, you know, both their masters and their fellow slaves with their potions that they could put together from the island. So have you ever tried to trace any connection with your mother's, her mother before her? I know it might have been difficult, but because you said it was passed down from your grandmother, I would sort of think that because families were so close at the time in Jamaica, that perhaps she got it from either her father or her mother.
Yes, we know it coming right down the line. Because
right. So it perhaps has been kept very pure. I mean, the formula perhaps haven't changed since way back.
No, haven't changed.
So you actually are very special. And, you know, perhaps you should be passing it on to, are any of your sons involved in the business with you?
No, not at the moment, because my two sons are still living in Jamaica.
In Jamaica, yes, you mentioned that. But I do want you to commend you on, you know, carrying on, you know, picking up the torch and carrying it on, because I am sure that wherever your grandmother and your mother and the ones before them are, they're very pleased that your mother helped the people in her district and perhaps your grandmother before her, because they were from a different part. Your grandmother was really from a different part of the area, right?
No.
She grew up in Burnt Savannah too?
Your
grandmother?
Yes.
Oh, so Burnt Savannah was blessed for a long time with we call them the medicine women. Right? And then the torch got passed to the medicine man. Well, you know, in the backyard, we labrish and we put together stories. So yes. I'm framing your story for you.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you, Earl, for sharing that very personal story with us. And it is so good for me to have a leverage with a real, if you don't mind me calling you, a countryman.
I am a countryman.
And you're proud of it.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And I was born and raised in Kingston, but I love the country and I love country people. Even when, you know, I had a house in Montego Bay when my kids were small, and even when I went down there, even when I didn't have to, I love going to the market. I just love going to the market and, you know, being with the market people, because I just love country people.
Because as it is right now, I raise my animals, my goats.
Now?
As it is right now.
You have goats? Oh. You live in the country?
Yeah, I was a little mini farm.
Oh, great!
Yeah, so I raised my animals and...
Not cows, though? Do you have cows?
No cows. I plant my crops, you know. So we eat fresh.
Oh, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. Now, are you able to get all the things you need for your special blend here?
Yes. Because,
oh, you are?
Yes, because right now we trade with the farmers market.
Mm-hmm.
They get produce from different countries.
Right, right. I'm from the one on Ponce de Leon.
Yes. Some of our product now come way from Honduras.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So different countries bring in their stuff, and we get it nice and fresh right here. So if you go to EarlsAmazingGreenJuice.com,
mm-hmm.
you will learn a whole lot. The listeners will learn a whole lot from EarlsAmazingGreenJuice.com.
Well, let me just give out the URL for you again one time, Earl. Any of the listeners who is interested in checking Earl out and Earl's special blend can go to www.EarlsAmazingGreenJuice.com. Did I say it right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to share with us, Earl?
Oh, it would take a couple of days.
That's cute. Anyway, it was my pleasure having you on the show. I hope you enjoyed just relaxing in the backyard and telling your story. And I know that you'll be quite successful. I mean, if the juice has helped you, and helped your mother and all the people it's helping, I'm sure that it's a blessing in a bottle.
Oh, yeah.
So, thank you. And I want to ask any of our listeners that are on the board that would like to make a comment before we go. We still have a couple of minutes. So you may touch one on your telephone if you'd like to ask Earl a question or to make a comment on the Labrish tonight. So I'm giving you a few minutes, listeners, if you want to interact with us, to hit one on your telephone so I can see you raise your hand like you're in school. You know, so just let me know. In the meantime, I want, Earl, I understand you're here in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Are you actually in Atlanta or in the suburbs?
I am in just a few miles from Atlanta, in Latonia.
Oh, you're in Latonia. Okay. And your products can be had online, right?
Oh, yes.
People can order online if they wish.
Yes.
Well, are you planning to go back to Jamaica to retire, or you are settled here?
I would say I got to wait and see, because now my business is all here.
Right, I see what you mean, yes. And, you know, you're not as senior as I am, but I know that I am retired here, and I just visit Jamaica. That's why this show is so intriguing to me, because then I can, you know, at least once a week, I can pretend I'm in the backyard sitting in my easy chair under a mango tree with the trade winds blowing across the island, and I'm just relaxing, chilling out, as the Americans say. So, I see a raised hand for 631-451, so I'm going to open up the mic. Good evening. This is Margaret. Who do I have? Welcome to the Labrish.
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine.
Hi, Janine.
Hi, how are you?
Just great.
I'm just calling to ask Earl a question, and I want him to tell him thanks for sharing his story. It was very interesting. And, of course, you know, you can learn a lot from what he said.
Right.
I just wanted to know if he's willing to share some of what is in that drink with us. What ingredients in the drink, if he can share it or it's a secret.
Well, we can share it, you know, because it's a business. We're running a factory.
So it is a secret formula.
Yeah.
Well, can you give us just some ideas of just what is in it? Not the amounts, but, you know, what one or two of the names of the herbs?
Yeah, well, I can tell you a couple. Really.
Sure.
I don't know what they call it, what we call it in Jamaica. It would be aloes.
Oh, aloes. Okay. I think they call that. What do they call that?
Aloe vera.
Oh, the aloe vera. Yeah. Okay.
Aloe vera here.
Right, right, right.
So,
and something about something heart, the bush. What is the name of that bush? Something for the heart, good for the heart or something?
Yeah, well, that's a separate thing altogether.
Oh, I see, I see. Got you.
So this juice that you're putting out, is it for just what your problem was, or is it for diabetes and other ailments that this juice can be used for?
Well, what this does, you know,
this
is just cleansing.
Okay.
Oh, it's a cleanse.
It's a cleanse. And you give, like, instructions as to how much to take? Because normally when they put out a juice, they would give you a guideline as to the ingredients of what the juice is all about and the amount that you should take to benefit from it.
Yeah, all the information is on the bottle, you know.
Oh, okay.
How to take it and how much water you're supposed to drink per day.
Okay.
And what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
All the ingredients that's in it. It's on the bottle.
Right, and it's all fresh.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
But we got to make it known so that if a person is allergic to any one of these fruits or vegetables.
That's what I'm thinking of. Right,
right. Right.
They will know not to take it.
Right.
So all the ingredients is on the bottle.
Okay.
Very good. Well, thank you.
We just don't tell anybody how to make it.
Right. We understand that.
Understandable. But usually when you purchase something of that nature, you want to know for sure what you're taking with what you just said. If you're allergic to something, then you would know if that's good for you or it's not good for you.
Right, right.
You know?
Gotcha. Well, thank you, Janine. Thank you for being a loyal fan.
Thank you.
And always here relaxing in the backyard with us. It's so good to have you.
Always relaxing and listening.
Again, what I'm going to say, if you go to www.earlsamazinggreenjuice.com, you will see a lot of people who give the testimony on the website, you know, and it's the same green juice that they take and help them in every way. So go to the website and see.
Yes, I'm not doubting that at all because, you know, coming from Jamaica too, growing up with my grandmother, she used to believe in a lot of natural stuff that she used to drink, and for certain things she had the answers to what to take or, you know. So I understand that and I believe in that. I just wanted to know, you know, because the listeners listening may not realize that, you know, they can check to make sure they are not allergic to it.
Right, right. Because I can't take aloe. That's one of the things that I can't take. But as you say that, Janine, I remember my grand aunt, it could be my great aunt, that when someone was ill, they would make a poultice and use the gauze and put it on your chest and things like that. And now I see that, you know, the last perhaps 15 or 20 years that they've introduced the patch with medication. It's almost like a poultice.
Yes.
Because they've embedded the medication in that patch. And I said, our forefathers were very smart.
Yes.
And because they knew that the pores would absorb, the skin would absorb, you know, certain things, and they were doing that long ago, before it was popular, you know?
And I remember my grandmother and growing up with her, because, you know, listening to everyone that you have interviewed so far, it all boils down to the same thing. We have the foundation of our grandparents.
Right, right.
It was very important to us during that time, because we did learn a lot, you know, in all different ways. And I remember her at the time, they used to call it Think Revival.
Yes.
But she used to put it to drain overnight, and the next morning she would get up and drink that.
First thing in the morning.
Aloe. Yes, the aloe is something that's been going back all these years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I know what he's saying is true. I'm not doubting what he's saying. I was just curious.
Right, I understand. Well, again, I want to thank our listeners, and if anyone on the board would like to, that is calling in, would like to interact with us or ask Earl a question, please put your hands up. Now, we just have a few minutes, and then we'll be signing off. And I want to remind our listeners once more that you're listening to Backyard Labrish, and we are here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And we want to ask you to let your friends know we're here. If they're not on our mailing list, and you are, we're asking you to send them a link and perhaps ask them if they'd like to be added to our mailing list, because we just want to share all these wonderful stories of growing up in Jamaica back in the day. So if there is no further interaction from the board, I am going to thank Earl again for being my guest tonight and wish him a lot of success in his business, and just thank him for being the holder of the torch that has been passed down seemingly from generations of his roots, his real roots. So, Earl, I commend you and bless you, and just know that you will do very well. And I'm glad that you have been healed of whatever was wrong with you.
Yes.
So thank you for being with us, Earl. Are you still there?
Yeah, I thank you, too, for inviting me on your show. And I'm able to discuss a few things concerning from my mama, because, like I said, my mama was so sick with diabetes and high blood. And when she died, she wasn't on any medication.
Oh, wow. And she lived to be 84.
Oh,
yeah. That is wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, and I hope that the young ones in your family, you know, the grandchildren and the extensions of your family will remember that, you know, it's always good to go back to your roots and do as much natural things as you possibly can. So with that said, I want to say good night again. And Janine, thank you for interacting with us. We have a few more callers on the board, but they just want to be listeners, and I want them to know that I appreciate them too. And whenever they're ready, they can raise their hands to join the Labrish. So ladies and gentlemen, and listeners who may come by later, this is Margaret Marshall, and I'm signing off in the backyard, and I hope to see you here next week when we'll have another very interesting guest. So with that said, those whose mic are open can say good night.
Good night. And God bless you, Earl, for everything that you did for your mom, and may God continue to bless you and keep you safe. Good night.
Good night, Janine. Thank you. And I want all my listeners to to know that you must make it a good week. Because remember, life is what we make it.
So make it good and true.
Right. What is the rest of that memory, Jim?
If you face it smiling, it smiles right back at you.
All right. Thank you, Janine.
You're welcome.
And make it a good one.
You
too. Bye-bye.
Hey, Janine. All right.
Good night, Earl. Bye-bye.
Good night. And you all have a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.